Welcome to Physics and Religion, a series of podcasts exploring the interaction between modern science and traditional religion. I am your host, Dr. Albert Stets. This is my last podcast on the subject of free will and consciousness, at least for the time being. My next long series will be about cosmology. At the end of the last lecture, I left you with two alternatives to consider, panpsychism and emergentism. Panpsychism is the doctrine that mind is a fundamental feature of the world, which exists throughout the universe. This is a familiar theme in primitive mythology as well as modern fantasy literature. The ancient trees, the Ents in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, are undeniably conscious. But for those of us who would like to explain everything in purely physical terms, this seems like an implausible view. However, it has been very difficult to accommodate consciousness into any sort of physics-only worldview, so panpsychism holds some appeal. Panpsychism stands in stark contrast to its main rival, emergentism, in that it assumes that mind suffuses the universe, whereas emergentism asserts that mind emerges only in certain very rare and special circumstances. I suppose the strongest argument for panpsychism is that consciousness, human consciousness, for example, that it should arise out of inanimate matter seems intuitively impossible. But there are other arguments as well. Take, for example, the behavior of primitive organisms, such as protozoa. It seems they have clear-cut motivations to find food and escape predators, and they are capable of learning from experience. It seems like a primitive form of consciousness. From where did it come? The most popular argument for panpsychism comes from Darwinian evolution. This assumes that evolution is a continuous process that molds pre-existing properties into complex forms, but which cannot produce entirely novel properties. For example, William James challenged us to conceive of consciousness in such a way that it did not seem like an interruption into the universe of a new nature non-existent until then. It's easy to think of counterarguments. There is no evidence that electrons and protons have anything like consciousness. If they do, it is causally impotent. The laws of physics, so far as we know, are closed at this level. There is also a serious problem with combination. Contrast a fully conscious human being with a boulder containing the same number of atoms. Why is it that the woman is conscious and the boulder is not, at least not in any meaningful way? The panpsychist would have to reply that when conscious atoms are combined in a certain way, human consciousness emerges. But this is a form of emergentism, which is just what panpsychism was supposed to avoid. Perhaps the most serious counterargument is that the theory is empty. It cannot be disproved, it doesn't go anywhere, it leads to no further insights into the nature of reality. Its rival, emergentism, claims that emergent properties, structures, and capabilities arise out of more fundamental entities and yet are novel or irreducible with respect to them. For our purposes, the question is whether consciousness is an emergent property of the brain. The words arise, novel, and irreducible are ambiguous, and this has given rise to a bewildering assortment of emergent philosophies. I can't imagine reviewing all these theories in a single book, let alone in one podcast, so I will content myself with describing two of the major issues. The problems turn on the nature of supervenience. Recall our half-serious definition of supervenience from a previous podcast. B is supervenient on A if it is true that if God created A, then B would follow automatically, and even God herself could not prevent it. With this in hand, let us take a look at what I take to be the majority view. It goes by the forbidding name supervenience emergentism. It holds that the physical world is entirely composed of physical structures that might be simple or composite, but the composite structures are arranged in strata or layers, let's say, in order of increasing complexity. The existence of layers is a consequence of novel properties that appear as a consequence of the complexity. Water makes a good example. Hydrogen and oxygen are simple structures, but when they are combined into water molecules, they exhibit a fabulous range of novel features. Think of the enormous complexity and variety of snowflakes. Further, along with the novel properties, there are novel laws that are fundamental in the sense that they are not reducible to the laws governing simple structures. In some cases, these laws have effects on lower-level structures, in which case we talk of downward causation. Obviously, snowflakes have no effect on water molecules, so in this case there is no downward causation. We would like to think, however, that consciousness is an emergent property of brains and that our conscious thought can influence the world around us via our brains. I need to define another philosophical term, brute fact. A brute fact is something that just is. There's no explanation. For example, why is the mass of an electron 0.511 MeV over c squared? I don't know. Don't ask. Just is. That's the way things are. There's no explanation. It's a brute fact. Supervenience emergentism is just such a fact. It happens according to fundamental laws that are themselves brute facts. This is the received view, but philosophers have become worried whether these fundamental laws allow for downward causation. Remember one last philosophical term, epiphenomenalism. This holds that consciousness has no effect on the brain. It's like the rainbow over a waterfall, or the steam coming out of the train whistle. The rainbow has no effect on the waterfall, and the steam has no effect on the train. As I argued before, it may be logically impossible to disprove this, but it seems wildly implausible, and philosophers don't want to be stuck with it. Unfortunately, supervenience emergentism seems to lead inevitably to this position. There is another problem, however, which from the point of view of the resolute materialist is even worse. I said a few minutes ago that supervenience emergentism starts with the assumption that the physical world consists entirely of physical structures. This is physicalism, broadly conceived, but it seems that some properties that supervene on physicalism are not themselves consistent with physicalism. Maybe this is just a technical issue that can be overcome by fine-tuning the definition of supervenience. For example, Terence Hogan, in an old paper, developed the notion of superduper-venience, which is supposed to do the job. According to this concept, B superduper-venes on A, and incidentally, my spell checker just went berserk at the word superduper-venes. B superdupervenes on A if we can come up with a robust scientific explanation of how this all comes about. We can do that with snowflakes. Snowflakes superdupervene on water. In the case of consciousness, that is just what we cannot do. I will close with a long quote from a 1999 paper in Philosophical Quarterly by the philosopher Jessica Wilson. I, for one, am prepared to agree that not only that it is currently more or less opaque how the various properties distinctive of mentality might be explained in terms of physicalistic acceptable properties, but also that given the seemingly transcendent nature of certain features of mental properties compared with features characteristic of physical properties, it is likely that there might never be any such explanations even in principle. Well, this is the perfect summary of the contents and conclusions of these series. Now is the time to circle back to the central theme of these podcasts, the significance of modern science to traditional religion. Recall that I told you in my introduction that the study of consciousness and free will was significant, not because of what science can tell us, but what it can't. What it can't explain is summarized beautifully in Jessica Wilson's long sentence, the transcendent nature of certain features of mental properties. I must emphasize that I am not attempting a God of the Gaps argument. I am not saying that because science cannot explain these things, there must be a God. That sort of argument is justifiably in ill repute. I am also not trying to resuscitate Cartesian dualism. I am not saying that consciousness and free will are part of some non-physical substance. I am saying that consciousness and free will flourish in a kind of sanctuary or protected area inaccessible to scientific scrutiny. I hope my analogy with meaningless questions in quantum mechanics will clarify my point a little, although I admit it's rather far-fetched. The issue, in that case, was the direction of an electron's spin. We can assign it a direction by doing a measurement, but the question, what is its direction in the absence of any measurement, is a question that science can't answer. Well, there is nothing about electron spin that would bother the most resolute physicalist, but the question about its direction simply cannot be answered scientifically. In the same way, these famous questions such as, do I have free will, or what is it like to be a bat, cannot be answered scientifically. Finally, let's return to the perennial question. Is there a conflict between science and religion? If I am right, then in the matter of consciousness and free will, there cannot be conflict. As Jessica Wilson would put it, even in principle.